It's Friday, September 25th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Hey, everyone, got a great show for you tonight, and thank goodness it's Friday. A lot to cover. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go-no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Todism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
Five.
Button, who's got the button?
Four.
There is no cause for alarm.
Three.
Everybody hold on to something.
Two.
Just press the button.
One.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii via the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Oahu. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Todd Cochran, and of course I want to encourage you to get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, check out the archive podcast available via the podcast link on the website. Sign up for the newsletter so that you don't miss a single episode. So I get you the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. It contains all the links of all the content that I talk about tonight, including links that are sent by you, our Ohana, the listeners of this podcast. So, get signed up for that newsletter. And, of course, once you do, it guarantees that you'll never miss an episode. And, hey, subscribe to the show via RSS feed. You can use iTunes, Zoom Marketplace, or your favorite podcatcher to sign up, and that way it'll get the show downloaded automatically while you sleep and essentially synced up to that portable media device when you plug it into your computer and get it synced up. Hey, I tell you what, a lot's going on this week. It really has been kind of crazy. I have to share with you, though. I told you last show how my dog... my Skipper Key of 12 years, who decided to go on a neighborhood roundabout earlier this last weekend. He has stuck pretty close to home. Matter of fact, since I scolded him from picking him up at the neighbor's house a couple blocks over, yes, you'd call them neighbors, he has hardly left my side. So he's here underneath my desk right now hanging out. I think he's scared he's going to get lost again. So it's kind of funny. He knew he was in trouble, and he has stayed home. Nothing like a evening where you can get other work done, because Tuesday I got in the office in the evening after eating dinner and sat down, and the internet was out, and it was a massive outage in my neighborhood. And it's, you know, you hate to say it, but it's like you go into like withdrawals because you don't have the net. luckily, my lovely wife was moving furniture, so you know who got to assist, right? Hey, fellas, this one's for all of you. I just got to share this with you. How many of you have adjusted your haircut depending upon how much gray you have? Well, I have gray has continued to increase up the hairline, along with losing, for those of you that have seen some camera shots from the back, lost hair from the top of my head as well. But I was in the into my barber, and I told him, hey, what I want is I typically do like almost a marine cut. I get it zero skin all the way up to where the gray goes away. And my barber's like, is actually a lady. She goes, you know, honey, she says, you just might as well give up. Pretty soon you're going to have to shave your whole head, because this gray is just not going to disappear. And I said, well, I'm not using color in my hair. It's not going to happen. And she goes, well, we're going to try a new haircut today. She says, just trust me. And she gave me a pretty decent haircut. I got home, and my wife was like, thought you were getting a haircut today. I said, this is my new haircut. She goes, oh, you finally have endorsed the gray, right? So, fellas, if you've got the gray hair issue going on, just endorse it and and accept it. It really sucks. It really does. But, hey, it's life, right? Okay, hey, tomorrow is the day. Actually, today is the day, if you're listening to the show, the AT&T MMS Challenge AT&T is scared to death. I've been watching the news over the last couple of days. They have been they're really worried about what's going to happen when they start turning on MMS for all the iPhone users. They feel that there's a high likelihood that their network is going to have some trouble. And, well, a number of you have submitted entries, both for New York and for Los Angeles, on what time the network is, or AT&T network is going to crash. We'll keep an eye out, and as soon as I hear about an outage, which I'll be watching for tomorrow, I'll write the time down. I'll try to get it to the best of my ability. It turns out they're going to start releasing. Now, here's the kicker. 10 a.m. is when they're going to actually start allowing phones to be upgraded. You actually have to sync your iPhone to your computer to get the upgrade to do MMS. So I'm betting that because they are waiting until 10 o'clock mid-morning on the East Coast and then rolling it out little by little each hour as the timeline moves across, or actually as the sun moves across the United States, they may survive tomorrow. But I'm betting if they do survive Monday or even Saturday, watch out. So we'll see what happens here. No matter what happens, we're going to give away a prize, okay? But I hope they don't have too bad of an outage, but I'm guessing tomorrow, massive trouble. You guys know I've been shopping for a car for a while, and I've been really thinking about my options, and I'm just looking for some feedback, okay? And you guys are going to have to send me an email pretty quick today because the transactions may start tomorrow evening. Thinking about a CX-9, a Mazda CX-9. Do any of you own a Mazda CX-9? And if you do, what do you like about it? If you hate your CX-9 or you heard horror stories, I need to hear about it pretty quickly. I'm looking at a 2009 model, so just let me know. Let me know what you think of the Mazda CX-9, and I definitely appreciate the feedback. Hey, we're continue to prepare for a Blog World and New Media Expo. I want to encourage you, if you are within striking distance of Vegas, if you're a podcaster, if you're a blogger, this is the event. This is the event of the year that you're going to want to go to. It's really for podcasters. For us, it is a really kind of a family reunion. And we have a lot of, a lot of parties, a lot of get-togethers, people catching up with what's happened in the past year. So really, the event at in Vegas, I guess it's October 15th, 16th, and 17th, with the actual show floor being open on the 16th and 17th, which is Friday and Saturday, is going to be, we feel and we hope, it's going to be a great event. So we've got a great theme, and I can't say anything about the theme yet because I've been sworn to secrecy by my team. But in the near, very, very near future, I'm going to have a T-shirt, and I don't know, maybe I'll wear it here on the show. And those of you that are watching tonight, I'm wearing my GoDaddy shirt. But those of you watching on Ustream, if you guys will get to know what our theme is, maybe a week early. I don't know. Maybe Brian isn't going to let me have a T-shirt until we actually get to Vegas. But we're going to have 500 T-shirts to give away. Got some party tickets to give away. Lots of cool swag, and of course, lots of information about what we're doing in the new media space. I do want to make a mention here. This month has been the biggest audience growth month that I have had really in a couple of years. I don't know how to explain it. The numbers have been astounding. We've seen about a 25% increase in audience size this month alone. A large, large majority of it is from those of you with mobile phones with media capabilities. We're seeing a high influx of people on Blackberries, a huge number of people with Androids, large number of folks with iPhones. It's crazy. I really never expected this big of a growth in audience size in a single month. And it makes a big difference. It really, really does. So I want to thank all of you, all the new listeners, all of the Ohana that are there. Welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. Thanks for being part of our family. For those of you that are new to the show, really, the format of the show never changes. I generally do, I always do two shows a week unless something crazy, absolute crazy is going on. The show's released every Tuesday and Friday morning. The first 10 to 15 minutes of the show is just usually me yakking with you guys about what's going on in the general world around here, what's going on with Raw Voice and the podcasting space and so forth. Then I spend a good 45 to 50 minutes on tech. This show is long. An hour, 15 minutes, usually at a minimum, is what the show length is. Very rarely do we go under hour 15. Very rarely do we go over hour 20. But the show is long, but just to let you know, every Tuesday and Friday, you can build the show into your life. You can listen to it basically on the way to work and on the way back from work. That's why I encourage everyone to be subscribed and using a portable media device. That way you can stop and then come back and listen later. So, and then at the end of the show, what I cover is voicemails. And if you have a comment on tonight's show, you can call in at +1-619-342-7365. geeknews@gmail.com. I want to welcome the few folks from on Ustream. You guys are welcome to make comments during the show. I will not be able to respond all of the time, and just because I'll be paying attention to the regular show format. All right, 2009 Podcast Award volunteers, we've received a couple of more. Hey, we kick off on October 4th. The volunteers' work really don't start until around the 18th or 19th of October, but I've got all your names. I'll be sending out some updates here soon. We're still looking for a few more people, so if you are not a podcaster and you don't have a podcaster in your family, a.k.a., in other words, it's not your husband or wife, we'll definitely take you on as a reviewer. Just send me an email to geeknews@gmail.com with the words in the subject line Podcast Awards Reviewer, and then I'll make sure we put that in a separate folder, and then you'll be included in reviewing a couple of categories for us when we get ready to review nominations. My departure out to the East Coast has been delayed a few days. I'm now heading out there on October 4th. I'll get in on the 5th. I'll be there just a week, so it's going to be very busy. I'll try to work in a meetup in Washington, D.C. the week of the 5th, so I'll let you guys know about that as well. Hey, just take care of a little business here before we get into the regular content. Hey, GoDaddy.com, wearing the shirt tonight. Use the products proudly. GeekNewsCentral.com, servers running on a GoDaddy server. Many of the products and services that we offer over at Raw Voice are running on GoDaddy servers as well. Hey, domain names. Shared hosting accounts, dedicated servers, virtual dedicated servers. Hey, where you want to go is GoDaddy.com. And when you get to that checkout counter, if you've forgotten my promo codes, you come back over to GeekNewsCentral.com, click on the GoDaddy promo code link on the website. That'll give you the list to all of our codes. Todd20 will save you 20% on a one-year shared hosting account. Todd will save you 10% on non-domain orders. Geek5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. ComSale will save you money on .com names and renewals. Thanks for GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here at Geek News Central. Matter of fact, we were the first show to ever be sponsored by GoDaddy, and continue to be proud to have them as a sponsor here. Hey, GoToMeeting. Hey, this week was the week for me to really kick the old spurs on GoToMeeting. Had a lot of online sessions with different vendors this week. Had some meetings with some podcasters. Matter of fact, on Tuesday, the next show that we do, the next show that's released, I'm going to be announcing a new website that we have. The Raw Voice team has teamed up with an individual. If you've been following me on Twitter, you've probably seen some of the hints. But we're going to be introducing a brand new website. Along with that, we hope at the very same time introducing a new advertiser. We're thinking that the paperwork's almost done, and the advertiser will be kind of linked to what we're going to be announcing with a new website, a great new vertical podcast site. And I won't say much more than that, but we'll be talking about that on the next show. We'll have a press release come out Tuesday as well, and, of course, blog post all over the place. And I'll tell you all about it during the next show. But anyway, I was having some online sessions with some folks involved with that. And I tell you, really, easiest way to have an online conference, it's just with a click of the button, boom, They can see what I'm seeing on my screen. We can walk through paperwork. I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to pick up a phone. I communicate through my little Logitech webcam up here. Just use the microphone on that. And it just works. Every time it works. GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast for your free 30-day demo. GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast for a free 30-day demo. Thanks for GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here as well. All right, let me go ahead and bounce into Google Chrome, and let's get our first article loaded up for the evening so that I can get through the content. And let's see here. Space Today. This happened earlier in the week, but we didn't talk about it on the last show. The Space Shuttle Discovery did make it back to Florida this previous Monday, completing a two-day cross-country trip from California. And they landed at Kennedy Space Center safe and sound. And, of course, they're immediately unloaded the shuttle and preparing it for its next launch, which, you know, these launches are going pretty quick now as they're trying to really get the rest of the life out of the shuttle as we move into the soon-to-be-retired space shuttles. Hey, over on the website Android and Me, and I don't have an Android phone, but some of you may that listen to the show. There's a guy over there that has I guess his website is called Cyan Ogen, CYANOGEN. Probably just destroyed the pronunciation on that, but this guy is a Android hacker, and he's appeared to have upset Google a little bit. And he received a cease and desist letter from Google. Details are not out in the wide open yet, but apparently they are not pleased with him distributing their closed source code, including Google Market, Talk, Gmail, and YouTube. So they've told him to stop, and it's basically what he's done here. What I could tell from this write-up is just like on the iPhone and how we have a hack to unlock the iPhone, in being that the Android operating system is open source, there are ROMs. You can load different builds of Android onto your phone, and he was putting together a build that included a lot of Google apps, and basically Google has said, nope, you can't do that. While he's, I guess he can continue to distribute the ROMs, at least Google's trying to stop him from doing that with those specific applications. So we'll see what happens. From the reading through the comments on this one blog, it appears that this is a pretty popular individual, because there's over 30,000 active users that are using some of his most popular custom Android ROMs. So we'll see what kind of feedback, or he's trying to have a dialogue with Google. And we'll see if that comes to fruition or if it's just a waste of time. I'm betting Google will just play hardball. A lot of mobile news this week. For those of you that are Windows Mobile 7 users, or actually Windows Mobile users, and have been waiting for Windows Mobile 7 forever, Steve Ballmer made a keynote during the company's Venture Capital Summit where he said that essentially Windows 7 should have been out a long time ago. He says they screwed up with Windows Mobile, wishes they already had launched WM7, and they've completely revamped the team. That means a number of people have probably gotten fired. He said the poor execution in Windows Mobile, we pumped in some new talent, and he says this will not happen again. So those of you that are Windows Mobile fans, maybe we'll see Windows Mobile 7 here in short order, but only time will tell on that. We'll keep an eye out on it. And, you know, is it going to make a difference at this point? I don't know, you know. They haven't delivered for a long time. All right, on the last show, we talked about how there was a version of Linux that would boot up in 7 seconds with a solid-state drive. Well, the folks over at Phoenix Instant BIOS have been able to boot Windows 7 in under a second. Yes, you've heard that correctly. I don't believe it in all honesty. It says Phoenix is showing off interesting things at IDF, but the real standout is their new Instant Boot BIOS. It's a highly optimized UEFI, whatever that means, implementation that can start loading an OS in just under a second. It says, combined with Windows 7 optimized startup procedure, that means you're looking at incredibly short boot times. They saw a Dell Adamo hit the Windows desktop in 20 seconds, while a Lenovo T400 with a fast SSD got there in under 10. Now, that's 10 seconds versus 2 seconds. That's a big difference. It really, really is. But that's what they're saying. So who knows? Maybe at some point here in the future, we will be able to have the ability to have fast boot times ourselves as well on the Windows platform. How you know, it takes my machine. I basically turn the thing on, and especially my desktop here that's old, I can turn that thing on, wait till it starts, get to the boot up logo, hit my password, and go take a shower. And when I get back to the desk, I think everything gets loaded. Now, a Windows Vista machine, on the other hand, I think, yeah, a couple of minutes, but none of them load fast. Give me a break, especially after you load a few apps on them. It just doesn't happen. So we'll have to see if this really lives up to its expectations. Okay, Finera. I've talked about Finera a little bit recently. The Finera 2.0N web application router is now available in the United States. You can order it for $99. The cool thing about this Finera router is it's also got some web tools in it. And the folks over at Engadget have put together a pretty cool video, 4 minutes and 23 seconds, that shows you really the power of this this wireless router / web application. It's got a whole host of web applications like Twitter, Facebook, Flickr, and you can use it even when your computer's turned off. So this is kind of cool stuff here. If you want to check it out, I have the link up to it in the show notes. Let me know what you know. The old Finera started out as tiny little things. This one is pretty big, and it looks like you can – let me know how many ports does it have. It doesn't show. Obviously wireless. They have a – what appears to be a – USB connector in front. I don't know how many LAN connectors in the back, but if you're wanting to run a Finera, the good thing about this is it allows you to set two SSIDs. So basically you can have your home set up as you normally would with a password, so you don't have to worry about the neighbors getting on your personal network. Well, the other SSID can be an open Wi-Fi spot, and you can actually earn money by actually if you want to charge for access, you can do that, or you can just have it opened up and it provides a separate route for people through their network. I tell you what I ought to do. I ought to buy about 10 of these and go give them to all my neighbors. Just leave them as a gift, you know, package them up and put them on their doorstep. Maybe we could get some Wi-Fi spots open up around my house. Of course, I would never ever want to use all my neighbors' open Wi-Fi spots, right? But you know what? It is an interesting consideration. And for those of you that are bandwidth hogs, you know, being nice to your neighbor and sharing a little, some cake with them from time to time, you'd be amazed what can be accomplished by making friends and saying, hey, by the way, sometimes my internet's a little flaky. Could I ever get on yours? And, you know, you might get the keys to someone's Wi-Fi connection and get a little extra access. All right, Intel demonstrated today what's called their Intel Light Peak Optical Tech. Excuse me, Intel Light Peak Optical. They were able to transfer 10 gigabits per second. This was amazing. It really was. They showed showed them transferring an entire Blu-ray disc in 30 seconds from one machine to the other. Now, this brings up a issue that I've been having here, and it's not necessarily completely related to this story, but as you guys know, I've got a mixture of Windows and Macs here in the home. I have all of my Windows machines running on goes through my router, and they dynamically issue an IP. I have a subnet name for the network. But my Macs, for some reason, I have a very difficult time connecting to my Windows machines and very difficult time for my Windows machines connecting to my Macs. Does somebody have a resource or a tool that makes it simple. How come it's so difficult? I don't know. Maybe it's just me. You know, I consider myself pretty tech savvy, but yet I have a very difficult time connecting between different computers. Now, like my Mac Pro, my first-gen Intel Mac Pro, I don't have too many problems with it, but my wife's computer, which is a, you know, a more recent Mac Pro, I can't get that thing to connect to any of the other machines in the house or any other Windows machines. So maybe someone out there can pass me a foolproof gouge on how to make these machines be nice to one another out there. So if you have some suggestions, geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, you can always call into the voicemail hotline at +1-619-342-7365. Hey, how many of you are recording stuff on your iPhone? You guys know here in the studio, I've got a Blue mic, right? I'm a big Blue fan. Matter of fact, I'm going to reach out to them, see if they're willing to come on board as podcast sponsors again for microphones for the 2009 Podcast Awards. But I was introduced to a microphone that you can plug into your iPhone in January out at CES. And I just remembered it today as I was cruising through some articles and I saw another review of it. It's called the Mickey. It's the Blue Mic Mickey. It's a microphone that, about the size of a credit card that plugs into the bottom of your iPhone, and it really improves the recording quality of any recordings you make with it. Now, what I've done here recently is I've been using some iPhone apps to basically tweet audio recordings into my Twitter stream, letting people know, hey, don't forget the shows tonight. Come out and watch. And the audio has been horrible. And I remember, oh, yeah, you know, I got to get one of those. So just pure coincidence here. It's a pretty good mic. And it is, you know, it might be a little bit bulky. But if you want a good way to record, you definitely want to check this out. It's called the Mickey, M-I-K-E-Y. And you can find it over at bluemic.com. I have a link to the Gizmodo review on it on the website. Okay, how much broadband do we really need? Well, I don't think we have. I don't think we could ever have too much broadband, right? How about fiber from my doorstep all the way plugged into the national backbone in the lower 48s. That's the kind of broadband speed I'm looking at. But there's some studies that have been done and some actually goals have been laid out by Cisco and some other organizations that basically did some studies. And what they've come up with is currently what we're seeing is 90% of people in the United States that are on truly broadband are right now at 3 megabits per second or less. Small companies and so forth are connected generally at about 5 megabits per less. Large anchor institutions, in other words, media conglomerates, big companies are generally connected to connections at about 10 megs or less. Now, wireless, we're all pretty much 1 megabits or less. Now, 2015, now remember, here we are. We're already, you know, we're well down the road here, and we're not too far away from 2015 if you really think about it. They're thinking that if the build out is going to have to continue at a very fast pace because the need or the requirements are going to demand that residential households have at least 100 megs to 1 gig by 2015. Now, I'm going to be very honest with you. If I have 100 megs in my house that I'm living at right now in 2015, let's see here. We ought to set up a challenge. Something like eat my hat or something like that. How many of you truly believe they're going to be able to get 100 megabits per second to 1 gigabit per second connections to each and every residential household in the United States that's on broadband by 2015? I really don't think so. I don't think this is a realistic number. But this is a coalition of 160 companies that help craft and set the agenda for the National Broadband Plan. And these are the data speeds and timetables they laid out. Now they say by 2020, There should be 98% availability at 100 megs to 1 gig for residential household users, 1 gigabits to 100 gigabits for large institutions by 2020. I don't know. I just don't I don't think that. You know, our national backbone capacity right now is at about 40 gigs per second. Now, it's being upgraded to around 100 gigs per second for a national backbone. So if they think, really, you know, if we're only going to 100 gigs per second on a national backbone, how in the world are they going to get 100 megs to 1 gig to each and every one of us? I don't think it's possible. But there's an article over on GigaOM. I'll have it linked up to for you in the show notes here. Twitter raised they're in process of raising $100 million in funding. They've already raised $55 million, and now they're raising another $100 million, which really what this does is it makes their valuation to extend out to about $1 billion. For a company that has made no money and going to have $155 million worth of investment, but yet I think their total usership is about 25 million right now. Simply remarkable amount of money being invested in Twitter. Do you guys think Twitter's worth $1 billion? I just, first of all, how are they going to make any money? You know, how are they going to make any appreciable amount of money? I don't think they, you know, in all honesty, I think maybe they have a small idea, but how are they going to have a clue? You know, how are they going to be able to raise that much? You know, I don't think it's possible. But $1 billion is the valuation of Twitter right now based upon this new $100 million in funding. For just a little, like, little service, it's almost like IRC. It's pretty amazing. It really is. You guys know I'm a Twitter junkie too, so it's absolutely crazy money. All right, once again, can we trust Google today? Google had some issues with Gmail and Google Apps. A number of folks were not able to check their email for a significant amount of time. People are complaining about it, of course. Now, as you guys know, I use Google Apps exclusively for all my email, document, calendar needs. That's everything that we run is on Google Apps. I don't run my own mail server. I don't have to worry about spam, the whole nine yards. It was this downtime was happening when I was in bed, so I really wasn't affected. But it is frustrating when your email goes down. We become so dependent upon it. You know, I don't know about you, but I probably check my email. Well, my machine checks it, you know, every 10 minutes or so and dings me when there's new mail. So, I just can't imagine going without email for very long. But Google's going to have to get this squared away because there's a lot of companies and a lot of municipalities and so forth. That, you know, the city of Los Angeles has been moving to Google Apps along with other civic departments. Even the United States government is toying with Google offerings. Now, I would tell Uncle Sam, just hold your horses a little bit here and don't make the jump yet. But this is the you know, the thought consideration that's underway by some government agencies is making the switch to Google Apps. Those of you on Ustream, give you a little different view here, top-down view, if you will. Hey, Scoble's got an article up talking about PR people and 10 ways to screw up at TechCrunch on their embargo policy. TechCrunch, essentially, for over a year now, has said that, we don't honor embargoes. We post what we feel like we need to, unless you can offer some sort of special deal. But Scoble's got 10 ways for a PR company or someone looking for coverage to basically kind of route around TechCrunch. Pretty brave of Scoble to do this with Mike Harrington being a buddy of his. But this is a good read for any of you that are getting ready to launch a new service, new site, want to get some exposure on TechCrunch, or if you're just, you know, trying to get exposure generally. There's some good advices here on what you can do to really get coverage without TechCrunch. Along with that, Scoble, congratulations to him and his wife, Marion. They had a child on Saturday. And so they got a new Scoble on the ground. I guess this is his him and his wife's third child, I believe. And so I was actually I saw some of his posts come up on Twitter early Saturday afternoon here, and was kind of watching that. But he posted a blog post about the real-time baby, and he talks about some of the challenges he had in, you know, keeping friends and family members and non-Twitter users and the non-technically inclined up to speed on what was going on real-time with the delivery. It's a pretty good read here. And I think what Scoble's realizing is that control of his own media is important, and having a central place for people to go to consume his media is good as well. He doesn't come outright and say it, but this post is up on his blog and has links to it. I did not realize on Flickr that if you forget to pay for your – I don't know how many of you have a pro account over at Flickr. I do. That if you let your Flickr account expire, then many of the pictures you have up on Flickr really kind of go dark. People can't get access to them. You can, but you know, I had to check my Flickr account tonight, and it was actually going to go dead on October 1st, so I renewed it tonight for 2 years. I saved a few dollars in doing so. I think like $1.25 or something off the 1 year subscription, but they have the capability now to take videos, and I must have been sleeping somewhere because I didn't know that. So I'm going to start sending most of my video stuff to Flickr first. Now, while it's a service, I'm paying for it. At least once it's on there, if I need to re-download it, I can. And the quality is pretty good, too. So how many of you are sending your videos over to Flickr, and what do you think about it? Now, being that Marion and Scoble had a baby this weekend, I thought, well, maybe it'd be good to find a cool tech site, a cool baby site for those of you parents out there that are getting ready to, you know, maybe have your first child or have one on the way. There's one that's called Baby Center, babycenter.com. And this is all about, you know, being prepared and what to expect and stories and ideas and, you know, testimonials. So, lots of good information here, and this site comes highly recommended, so share that with you. You know, last show, or 2 shows ago, we talked about how, quote-unquote, the polar caps were melting. And then on the last show, we talked about how the freezing has already started and the winter freezes on. Well, today I see another article about how the polar is still melting. Who's got the right story here, okay? It's all about agendas over at treehugger.com. They're quoting today, oh, extreme polar melting. We have to watch out. And then, of course, on, you know, other venues are saying, oh, the melting wasn't so bad. The freeze has already restarted. I think it's just comical. No one's on the same page. No one has the same story. Scientists are fighting with one another. It just makes you wonder. All right, this next article, and the reason I wanted to bring this up, it's not necessarily technical, but it because you guys all know I'm a retired Navy. I spent time in the Middle East, did some, you know, basically my tours of duty and in some combat tours. And I was reading today on the Houston Press at their Houston News blog about a lawsuit that's going through right now, which said a government contractor tried to force a worker to understate injuries in Afghanistan. And this company's called Fluor, F-L-U-O-R. And basically, the company was pressured by, or actually people within the company pressured workers within the company to understate injuries in written reports. Now, it isn't clear here if they were actually reporting on military members or on contractor injuries, but it caught my attention enough that guys that are in the military today, they get hurt overseas and they come back and they recover from the injuries and go on to continue to do their active duty tours and then retire later. Basically, their medical records can be reviewed by the Veterans Administration for determine if they're going to get any type of compensation or help or training and so forth. So when I see this, when I saw this report about this particular company being accused of underreporting or understating injuries, it just makes my blood boil. And whether or not it was a contractor or a government person, this is wrong. You know, these guys are over there doing stuff for the country, and to think that they would be pressured to understate injuries as a performance issue for the government, it just blows me away. So I have this link in the show notes. You guys can check it out if you feel worthy, comment on it. But I know it's non-tech, but I just saw it and I had to share it with you guys. It just made me shake my head. It really did. Let's go ahead and get back into the tech content here. Over in Business Week, India outsourcing, pay is down, competition is up. I've got this guy that has been calling me about twice a week, and I've told him every time he calls that I'm not interested in his company services. He's gotten to the point where he actually uses different numbers. I'll see a number that comes in that's unknown. I will answer the phone, and it's immediately this dude, and now I'm hanging up on him. And he's being sneaky, and I don't understand why he doesn't understand, no, I'm not interested in your services, but it tells me a telling tale that the companies that are doing IT work, programming, and so forth in India are probably under some stress. And for this guy to pull the tactics that he's been pulling and calling me and trying to get my business, it makes you wonder. And, you know, at some point, hopefully I'll be able to get this guy's numbers all programmed into my phone so that I'll know when he calls on the one of the five or six numbers that he calls, it's him, and I can just hit ignore and let it to go voicemail. But they say that within the India IT structure right now, it says that India's largest outsourcing providers hand out the stingiest raises in more than a decade. And for Indian engineers with 2 to 5 years experience, the 12 months actually saw them lose nearly 7% of their income. I think many of us in the United States are seeing, decreases in our income as well. The national average raise, according to a survey by IDC, was about 1.4%, with most salary gains to those with the most experience. But they're finding that companies are keeping their staffs longer. People aren't jumping from company to company because the recession is affecting them as well. Average income over there is about $28,000 a year, who is a software engineer. So, considerably less than a software engineer here in the United States. But interesting to see what's happening with the global economy hurting India as well. Actually brings up something I was going to talk about earlier in the show. Here in Hawaii, we have a constitutional mandate that the state have a balanced budget. They cannot run a deficit. So the governor's been very proactive in trying to, get wages cut. And what the teachers union here in Honolulu just agreed to yesterday was 17 furlough days per year. And what this is going to mean for our family is that every second Friday, every 2 weeks, the kids will be off school. The schools will be closed every other Friday. And I thought that there was a federal mandate that kids go to school so many days a year. Apparently not, because my kids are going to be off every other Friday for at least the next 2 years because of budget cuts and the teachers picking furloughs over a pay cut. And really irritates me because they could have took a pay cut and still kept the schools open, but they decided not to do that. So are you guys seeing that in your communities? Are you guys seeing furloughs and schools closing certain days because the state doesn't have enough money? That's what's happening here. And, my kids are old enough that my oldest daughter can watch my youngest. And, really we won't be affected. But there's so many parents out there that have, two incomes or both the husband and wife are working. And with little kids, I can't imagine what they're going to be going through. All right, Computer World's talking about the MMS potential crash of the AT&T network. I'll have that up in the show notes. This next article is one that, boy, oh, boy, you got to bookmark. It's over on eWeek. This is a expose on how rogue antivirus sites snag victims. And this is a good one. It really is. It shows how people are being sucked in to actually load a bogus software. And they actually have a online presentation where you can step through and you see the different ways that people are being sucked in and by clicking on things they shouldn't be clicked on. Great tutorial, folks. This is a great tutorial. Or parents, show your kids this stuff and say, okay, when you see this, don't touch this. Stop. Stop what you're doing right here and close the browser. You know, this is really going to help get people aware of some of the tactics being used on websites to influence us to click on something to essentially install software. So I have this link up in the show notes, guys. Check this out. It's exposing how rogue antivirus sites snag victims. And really, these antivirus sites that snag victims are not antivirus sites. They're malware sites. Over on Extreme Tech, one of my favorite sites that they syndicate most of their content now, but upgrading to Windows 7 the easy way. And as we talked about in a previous show, there are varying times it's going to take you to upgrade your Windows 7 install, depending on how many applications you have, how big your hard drive is, and so forth. So this goes into some things that you can pay attention to and some steps you can take when you are actually upgrading Windows XP or Vista to Windows 7. The most important thing here is Microsoft include a handy tool that eases your migration to a new Windows installation. It's called Windows Easy Transfer. Essentially, the wizard gathers up the various photos, videos, songs, and other documents, not to mention the program settings from all your applications, and stores them in one ginormous, as the website calls it, semi-convenient file. And once you install the new operating system or set up your new computer, you can run the wizard again and import all of these files. So this is pretty cool stuff here. Microsoft has went to a lot of work to try to make your upgrade as painless as possible. You know, you can basically do a fresh install, and this is probably the way to do it. So again, Windows Easy Transfer Wizard is what you're going to want to pay attention to when you're doing your upgrade to Windows 7. We're just about a month away from the release of Windows 7 to the general public, so look forward to that. As we all know, there's a lot of stories in the news about exploding batteries, exploding lithium-ion batteries, and they're saying on Slashdot that exploding iPhones may be a thing of the past because researchers at Taiwan Industrial Technical Research Institute have developed a new polymer that is supposed to make lithium-ion batteries much safer and prevent them from overheating. So essentially it provides insulation and so forth so that these batteries won't short circuit. So we'll have to see what comes of this. But the folks at this Taiwan Taiwan's Industrial Technology Research Institute say they've come up with a better lithium-ion battery. Only time will tell. All right. Story of the day. And if you don't go check this video out, you're not a geek. It's basically entitled Bear 4. And this is an event that happened August 23rd, 2009. There's a high-def video from the edge of space. And essentially what these guys did is they're a bunch of amateur photographers / I guess balloonists. I don't know what the actual title of this is. But what they did is they got one of those high-altitude balloons. This is actually their fourth flight. They loaded it up with a bunch of instruments attached to it, including a high-def camera. And they launched it very early in the morning, and the balloon reached an altitude of 107,000 feet. That's up there, folks. That's right on the edge. And the high-def camera kept on running. And they were able to get about 3 hours, or actually 4 hours and 22 minutes of high-def video, including the 90 mile per hour free fall from 107,000 feet to the landing zone, which was 89 miles away from their launch site. There was a parachute, so there wasn't this catastrophic crash. But the Bear 4 HD camera flight, I have the link up in the show notes. It's a 9-minute and 58-second video. I sit here and was memorized by the whole thing. It is pretty cool to see what the view is at 107,000 feet in high def. Pretty good by a bunch of amateur guys. Real cool stuff here. All right, if this doesn't concern you a little bit, nothing will. Google has been ordered by a judge to shut down a Gmail account of a user who received unsolicited banking info. We talked about this on the last show, where a bank accidentally sent confidential information to an individual's Gmail account by mistake. The bank tried contacting the individual to ask if the data was destroyed, and the individual never replied. It was probably one of those 9 or 10 or 11 or 12 Gmail accounts I have. Oh, I didn't say that right. You know, everyone's got a couple of Gmail accounts, right? How often do you check them? Never. Use them one time for specific purpose or so forth. But anyway, Google has been ordered to deactivate the entire account by the judge. Just because this individual did not reply to the bank and confirm that the email and contents of the email had been deleted, the judge has ordered, again, Google to deactivate the entire account. Now, can you imagine maybe being on vacation somewhere? You've got your whole life of email in this account, and you get back, and it's been deactivated by Google? Because this judge said so? This person did nothing wrong. He received this email because of a mistake of the bank. The bank messed this up. And yet, a judge actually agreed and forced Google to deactivate the bank account. Now, no word yet on if Google did this. But Google, if you don't fight this, this is wrong. This is really, really wrong. Now, someone in the IRC chat or chat just asked on the Eastern chat, why didn't they just delete the email? I think that's what the judge should have said, should have instructed Google to, and of course, this is just as bad, violation of privacy, probably is even worse. Probably the person would then have a suit against Google. Hey, you went into my account, you violated my privacy, you deleted my email. What else did you look at while you were in here? So I'm sure that could have been another issue. I don't think Google should have done anything. I think Google should have said, no, I'm not deleting this person's account. It was the bank's fault. Boy, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? Now, if that didn't get your blood boiling, the Senate, the U.S. Senate, says amateur journalists, that's in other words, those of you that blog, podcasts like you and I, don't deserve shield protection. You guys know that if you're a journalist working for a newspaper and you have some guy come up to you on the street and his name's Joe, and Joe tells you, hey, I know about Congressman X that was out with Congressman's wife, and I got a story for you. And you take that information down, and you go out and you confirm some sources through some third parties, and you put that up in the newspaper. And when Congressman X gets mad and goes after the newspaper, that source is protected, right? Well, Congress has been working on a federal shield law that allows journalists to protect their sources. Many states already have local laws on this front. But unfortunately, the Senate, as it was working on its own version of the bill, apparently decided that the law should only apply to professional journalists who make their living that way. Can I be considered a professional journalist because I make my living blogging and podcasting? Define professional. Receiving money for your work? Hey, that's me. Okay. Well, anyway, I guess if I pay you $5 for writing a blog entry, if I pay you, that would make you a professional? You're earning money, right? Maybe not making a full-time living. This is, should we expect anything less from our senators? They just don't understand. They're clueless. You know, nothing surprises me anymore. It shouldn't surprise you guys. It just, it continues to be this just disgusting. It just, Run them all out of town. They all should be, you know, not reelected. All right. On my website at geeknewscentral.com, one of our contributing authors over there. Matter of fact, we're looking for some bloggers at Geek News Central. If you're interested in writing for Geek News Central, definitely willing to have you come on board right now. I know that there's a couple people actually on Ustream right now that have asked for positions to blog, and I'm definitely going to be reaching out to you. But if you'd like to be a blogger on Geek News Central, let me know and look at your basically your writing credentials and love to have you on board as a blogger. We're looking to continue to increase the amount of content on the website. This is a paid blogging position. It's basically pay per post. And just send me an email for details. Anyway, KL Tech Muse at Geek News Central wrote about SideWiki. It's a new service that Google has introduced. It's a plug-in that you put in your Firefox or Internet Explorer browser. When you come up to a website, there's a little bar that shows up in the left-hand corner of your screen. You click on it, it opens up, and you can write comments about a website, an article, without ever commenting on the main page or within the blog itself. To be honest with you, this is, as KL Tech Muse wrote on my website, the further dispersing of comments. And I think it's really ripe for fraud. You can have a spammer come in, write comments in the SideWiki. I noticed stuff already on certain websites where people have come in and basically linked back to other sites. I just think this is it's good in concept. But in the world that we live in today with all of the scam artists, people that are trying to milk the system, just don't think it's a good idea. I really, really don't. There's a place where you can report abuse and vote down an article, but if you want to try SideWiki, it's basically available at google.com/SideWiki, and it'll take you to the page, and you can actually load it in a browser. I do not, at this point, endorse this particular product because I think it takes the conversation away from the blogs. Now, if we think about this, though, for a second, there are a lot of sites out there that specifically newspapers, New York Times, there's many times you can't comment on an article, and I could see this being very powerful in that regard. There's many sites that don't approve all comments, could be very powerful in that regard as well. I'm sure that there's going to be lawsuits over this as people go to major media sites and make comments about the commentary, exposing maybe things that or asking the hard questions that probably should have been asked instead of something being watered down. So maybe this could work out okay. But it only works out well if everyone is using it. And I don't know if it's going to have that big of a pull or not, but it's, again, called SideWiki, new product by Google. Love to hear what you guys think about this. Geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline +1 619-342-7365. All right, Intel. You know, disclaimer here, I do own Intel stock, but Intel shows chips can get smaller, and this excites me. Even from a person who's invested in them, it excites me, but Intel is showing that their chips, their transistors on a chip can get smaller. For the first time, they have a working chip using transistors with features just 22 nanometers. That's a billionth of a meter across. Shrinking these basic building blocks of chips will, in theory, make them faster and more efficient. And Moore's Law continues, shows that there's still some life in Moore's Law. Moore's Law states the number of transistors it is possible to pack on a silicon chip for a fixed cost will double every 2 years. So we'll see what happens with this, but we'll see. Intel is currently making chips based on a 45-nanometer technology, and will move to 32-nanometer later this year. And, of course, they've just done their first chip down to 22. Now, what did we start out in 1999? I think it was 185 nanometers was the actual chip size. Now we're going down to 22. So there's a couple other companies involved. IBM is involved in this as well. So exciting stuff here. And, you know, now I've got 8-core machines. Maybe we're going to go up to, like, 20 core machines. Be cool. All right, the deadly science of an electric car. And, you know, this is a Washington Post article that really talks about the dangers in so many of these electric cars out there being so quiet. And I guess the story I want to relate to is obviously it's got effects for people that are vision impaired, hearing impaired. It's got hearing impaired. It's got impacts for people that live in areas with high fog density in the wintertime. When I was living in Lemoore, California, I'm not kidding you, the fog was so bad, we had what's called 3-2-1 line fog. And any of you that have been driving in California across the San Joaquin Valley on I-5 will notice as you're driving along and you're getting ready to come to an exit, there's a rumble strips. Dun-dun-dun, 3, dun-dun, 2, dun-1, turn. That's your indication that you are at the exit because sometimes you can't see the exits. Well, some of those one-line mornings or one-line evenings, I would come up to a corner, and you know, you're basically, it's dark, heavy mist, and it's really peculiar because you roll down your windows in your car, you sit there for just, you know, a few seconds, and if you don't hear nothing, then you punch it and shoot across the intersection to get through because you're praying that your ears are good enough to hear a car coming either way. My prediction. There's going to be people getting killed in the Silicon and San Joaquin Valley in California because in the winter, when you roll up to a stop sign and you roll down your window, you're listening for that car coming. If you can't hear it and you pull in front of one of these electric cars, someone's going to die. Now, what they're talking about, automakers are proposing adding some artificial vroom to alert pedestrians. If I was living in San Joaquin Valley and I had one of these cars, I would be putting something on there myself. I would be scared to death to be driving one of these vehicles in the fog. There has to be something because in those situations, all you can do is listen. In the daylight, it's almost worse because if the fog's really bad, you can't even see the glare of headlights hardly. So, any thoughts? Any of you that live in high fog areas, are you guys concerned about this? All right, over on TechCrunch, Semantic shows the dangers of shortened Twitter links. I have this link up in the show notes. This should be pretty self-explanatory. It's a video. You watch it, I think your eyeballs are going to pop out of your head. Be careful on those shorter URLs unless it's from a source that you really, really trust, okay? Internet Explorer 6 users. You're being introduced to Google Chrome Frame, that is. It's free, installs in seconds. It's also for Explorer version 7 and 8. And what it really does is it really makes your Internet Explorer a Chrome browser. It swaps out many of the core functionality. Microsoft is not happy about this plugin at all. They're saying that it makes Internet Explorer more dangerous. But really, it's a shot across the Microsoft bow for this Chrome frame insert that you put into or actually load as a plugin into the browser. Interesting development on Google's part. Savvy marketing at its best. How many of you have tried it? How many of you are using it? And again, primarily they're targeting IE6 folks. All right, BBC, India's launched 7 satellites upon a single launch. Basically, they had 7 mini satellites as part of its cargo. They had a successful launch here over the previous couple of days as far as space news go. And those of you that live down in down under, living in Australia, I hear you guys woke up to like you thought you were on Mars. It says a large stretch of Australia's east coast, including the largest city, Sydney, has been shrouded in red dust blown in from the desert outback. You know, here in Hawaii, we are very famous for our red dirt as well. And as they were doing construction across from us, it was horrible. I mean, we would have to dust the house every couple of days. But from the looks of the pictures I saw on the internet, you guys had it many, many magnitudes worse than what I have ever seen. I can't imagine. Can you imagine waking up in the morning and looking out the window and it's like red from dirt and dust? Would that just about freak you out? So lots of stories about this. And huge swath of area that has been affected, partly because of the drought and winds that were specific in the area, really got slammed down there. So I hope it's cleared up and things are getting better. But you're definitely dealing with a major dust storm down there. Okay, that's all for the regular content tonight. I do have some email, no voicemail. Did I say red water? I'm actually reading some of the comments on the in the chat room. I have to go through this. We'll talk about your comments in the chat room after the show here. Let me go ahead and get into the email comments. No voicemail tonight. First link is from Andrew Darlow. He said, "Hey Todd, hope all's well. The story goes well with the points you raise about new ways to fight identity theft and the unbelievable Bank of America story about the gentleman with no arms having problems cashing a check, and talks about an FBI system that blows away fingerprinting." So he's got that link for me. I'll share that up in the listener show notes. I want to thank Keith for volunteering for be a podcast award reviewer, Jack for volunteering. He also had some comments, Jack did. He said, also, he says, and this I'm reading here, this is second paragraph, basically talks about the podcast award. He goes on and say, also, I think you have finally nailed the intro. When the show started, I heard the modem connect, and I knew I had connected with GNC. I've been listening to the various iterations of this intro, and like you, initially liked it, but something wasn't right. It wasn't finished. The suggestion to add the modem connect was the right idea, but the first couple of mixes wasn't quite right about it. Then the one for the show was it. In the first couple of mixes, the modem never connected and was not loud enough. Okay, that may be too geeky, but for the geek in me, I needed to connect and not fade out. The last one did, and I loved it. Congratulations to you and the individual that put it together. He has some mad mixing skills, Jack. Jack, I agree, and he has went above and beyond the Call of Duty here. I'm really pleased with the last mix, too, and you're right. The modem actually connects. And that's what it's all about. Thanks for your comments as well. I want to thank Alex for volunteering for the Podcast Awards reviewer, Terrence as well. I got an email from Joe. He says, actually, this is the same gentleman that made the new intro. He says, Todd, I read the article by Robert Scoble about online data disappearing with great interest. Just the other day, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine about, is digital really better? And he goes on to say, one of the items we focused on, just to make the argument simpler, was digital photography. When you consider the price of equipment, processing digital wins hands down. He goes on to say, yes, you can spend lots of money on equipment, but I'm talking about the average consumer. Digital also wins for efficiency of storage space. 1,000 photographs would take up much more room than even an old full-height 5.25 hard drive. But what about security? What about endurance of those photos? Scoble makes some of the same points I did. I have combed through many boxes of photographs at my grandmother's house and found some real gems along with pictures of people nobody could remember. If somebody puts effort in the effort, digital wins for cataloging right along storage, but what are our grandchildren going to paw through in 50 years? Disregarding availability, I nearly lost a good chunk of my photos when a nearly new hard drive crashed not long ago. There's a question of viability. Will the data that is your photographs and memories even be readable in 50 years? Remember, it wasn't that long ago that we're using 5.25 floppy disks, and what percentage of the audience even knows there were once 8-inch floppy disks, Joe? Joe, I agree completely, but I think what we're going to see is the JPEGs, the PNGs, the GIFs of today. In 15 or 20 years, there will be cottage industries of companies that their sole business in life will be taking archives of thousands and hundreds of thousands of digital photos and converting them into something of current day value. Now, so far as having due diligence on your data. You know, this is going to be big challenge for all of us for many, many years. Okay, I'm in my mid-40s, and I figure that I probably have, if, you know, God willing, I have a good 40, 50 years still left in me, right? Viability of being able to use a computer, I hope I have a good 40 or 50 years left in me. At some point, my archive, I will have to continue to keep up with the times. But at some point, I'm going to have to take my archive of data, and I'm going to hand it over to one of my kids, or I'm going to have to hand it over to a grandchild or a company, somebody that can manage this stuff. Because you're right. A hard drive crash, a house burned down, a company go out of business where you were storing stuff off-site. You know, as much as I'd like to say something is forever, nothing is forever. It's been proven that if you don't, you know, if the population was wiped off the face of the earth, that the jungles and the forests would probably take over most of the planet within 15 years. So I think we have to really put some thought into this as time goes on, because I think there's going to have to be some cottage industries out there that do this for us, because you and I, we're pretty geeky and we might be able to keep up with it, but will my kids want to? Or their kids? Will anybody care about great-great-grandpa Geek Cochran? Will he care about his photos? Probably not. So you're right. It is a challenge. Okay, I got an email from Mike. Hey, been listening to your podcast for a while. I wanted to thank you for putting out a quality product. By the way, I grew up in your neck of the woods. We had a house in the third basin of Lake James backing up to Coldwater Lake. Another not-so-good thing in common, I also broke my neck in Angola dirt biking. Keep casting Mike. Mike, man, you are like Lake James, Coldwater Lake. That's like stomping grounds for me, dude. When I was growing up, that was like where we went hunting girls. Wow, very, very cool. So I know you're in Ohio now, so thanks for being part of the Hana and, you know, really being a, I guess, homeboy. Got an email from Craig. He says, in the news today, and it's about the music industry. I'll have that linked up to you in the show notes. It's about file sharing discussions. My sign almost dropped. You guys might get to see the blueberry sign fly away here in a second. Okay. I guess that's it. That's all I got for email comments tonight. Geeknews@gmail.com, folks. Geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline, +1-619-342-7365. I'll be back here with you, of course, next Tuesday, live from the Palatial Studios here in Honolulu. I'm calling it Studio H now, right? You guys notice that in the show notes? And it's been my pleasure. Love to hear you guys what you think about the show and the particular articles tonight. And again, next Tuesday, big announcement. A big announcement about a new site that we're launching. I'm very excited about it. A very specific topical content podcast site, a new vertical for us. We have a great partner. You can kind of look through my Twitter stream, and you'll get a very quick clue on what we're up to. And I think this is the start of something big, and one of many vertical websites that we're going to be launching over the next year. All right, folks, that's it. Everyone, take care. Be safe out there. Have a great weekend. Again, geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline, +1-619-342-7365. Until next Tuesday, everyone take care and aloha.